The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Cue the intro. Good morning, everybody. On a Saturday, March the 23rd, 2024, good old 710 KNUS. The weather, beautiful right now, 67 the high. Then tomorrow, rain comes back, 48. And Monday, it's going to be cool, 37 degrees. Just wonderful guests. And the book is entitled Radio, What Happened? 100 Years of Changes. Terry Bettis and Jim Christopherson are our guests. And you can just tell if you listen to the last hour, these guys have been in the trenches and the business that well, the three of us just love, and in watching it happen and watching what's happening. You know, I was thinking during a break, when I first got into business, I saw the owner every day. And the next job I worked, we were in a group, but we saw the owner quite a bit. And then the next one, we saw the owner, and then that started to drift. And then I got into situations like with working with Clear Channel. I don't think I ever met the owners. iHeartRadio, I don't think I ever met the owner. They're publicly traded, but I never met the chairman of the board. And you document that what we all began working at. Work, at least I did, and I think you did, locally owned stations. So I'll turn it over to whomever wants it, Jim or Terry. What happened?
You know, this is Terry. That's a long story. But the book does talk about the importance of locally owned radio stations. The first station I worked at, I met the owner one time, but he was in a different market. But it was locally managed. It was locally run. It was, as you know, as far as that goes, it was a locally owned station. Once they get into the groups, you know, when you say you never met the owners, who are the owners of some of these conglomerates? You know, like you say, they're publicly traded companies. Yeah. And all of that changed. A lot of that changed in the mid-90s with deregulation, when they said, yeah, there's no limit to the number of, you know, AMs and FMs and TV stations that you can have. So corporations started buying up radio stations, and that's what's happened over the last 20 years or so. But it also tells us how important still those small to medium market stations are that are lucky enough to be locally owned. But the corporate-owned stations has completely changed the entire complexity of this business. And actually, there's a way to say the title of our book, and there's really a pause after radio. It's like, radio, what happened?
Indeed.
Know, what did happen to this business over? And this book came from a podcast that Jim and I started back in, gosh, Jim, was it 2020, COVID year? We started a podcast called Radio, What Happened? And the response we've had kind of is what led us to thinking maybe we should follow this up by, you know, publishing this book. And that's where we're at now.
Peter, Terry, I'm comic relief in this whole project. Terry's a visionary, and I told him many years he can think with both sides of the brain, creatively and literally. When he came to me and said, "Let's do a podcast about radio," I honestly thought he was delusional. I thought, "Well, who's going to listen to that?" And I'll be darned, you know, people that are within our age group and lifestyle love those little transistor radios back then. So it just kind of took off like a rocket. But to build on what Terry said, you know, it's not just corporate radio. It really started before that when they allowed, I think it was the old Arizona rule or something, but they allowed a lot more signals into the market. So where you would have two or three radio stations in a single city, all of which were, you know, profitable, suddenly you would have 18 signals and the whole industry was going broke. So that's when Reagan revolutionized radio, and you could have 5 to 10 radio stations in a market, given the market size. And that was a cost cutting measure that was supposed to help radio become profitable again. Because again, with 18 radio stations in a market the size of, say, Abilene, Texas, most of them are not going to be operating profitably. Yeah, right. So, but these cost cutting measures finally led to public trading, which led to a return on the investment of your shareholders, which led to bean counters running it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the I always make the comment that it used to be 10 announcers at one station. Now you've got a cluster of 10 stations with one announcer.
Yes.
So the whole thing has changed dramatically.
I've tried to demonstrate, I've said to folks, if you can imagine $1 being at the end of a string or being held by somebody and 35 hands jumping for that $1.
Yeah.
And the hand that can jump the highest gets the dollar.
Right.
Well, when the corporates came in, and I witnessed it, and there used to be like 8 or 7 or 6 people doing traffic, and not traffic reports, but internal traffic. And the theory is called squeeze or shrink to profit. So the bean counters, as you call them, and I called them far worse, they would just get rid of 6 people. And they'd tell 2 people, you're going to do 7 stations. And they got rid of promotions, and they got rid of, I mean, it was just horrible. It was a bloodbath. And
I'll tell you one additional thing that has changed. And our intent is not to bash the corporations. Our intent is to shed a light on the changes in this industry over the last 100 years.
I think the truth needs to be told, too.
Sure it does.
Yeah.
But one thing, I work on a board of a local nonprofit event that raises money every year for a local organization. We have always gone to the radio stations for help in promoting the event. And they've always been, up until last year, have always been very happy to promote the event. And they would run what we call PSAs. And public service announcements.
Right.
And they would run these to promote this event, and it helped us raise money for this nonprofit organization. Last year, and I'm not going to name who it was, but I went to a corporate-owned chain and said, hey, we're doing our event again. Here's the information, blah, blah, blah. And the response was, we can't run PSAs anymore.
Yeah.
We can't do that. That's the whole thing about not supporting your community.
Did they give you a reason why they would not run them?
Corporate dictate.
Sure. I mean, that's all it takes.
That's it. Yeah. And, said, we can't run PSAs.
And I know of one of the biggest of the groups that got rid of all of these people who were, you know, single moms, and I saw some firings that were, and they're building estates on Long Island. Well, you know, that's wrong. And they've taken, and the other thing, my other critique is, it's turned into, talk radio has turned into one angry white guy follows one angry white guy. That what we used to do, and now I sound like an old guy, but radio has taken on a whole different veneer, and a lot of it comes from the corporates, and a lot of it comes from the politics. Now radio has become tribal. Talk radio has become tribal, my tribe and your tribe. And we, you know, as kids, we could switch back and forth and love everything that we listened to, everything that we, as you said, watched it on the radio. Your thoughts?
Well, what comes to my mind is the difference in today as it was back 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And when I started in the business 40 years ago, personality radio was everything. The Bobby Oceans, the Charlie Van Dykes, the Charlie Tunas, the Ron Chapmans, the Hudson and Harrigan morning shows, the those personalities which we grew up with and couldn't wait to listen to, today's audience doesn't know what that is because they have so many choices from streaming services, from digital, from podcast, from different formats. They have so many choices. They just want to listen to the music. And I was talking to a guy probably 20 years younger than me, but he didn't really know what personality radio was. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't even, why would I listen for some announcer? You know, he could, it was like I was speaking a foreign language. But to me, that's what made this business. And it's just different. It's just different now.
Yeah. You guys, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you do.
I'm
sorry. I apologize. In the first part of your book, you know, you talk about yours truly, Johnny Dollar. You talk about the great radio shows, and they were still predicated just like the top 40 disc jockey shows. It was that man or that woman that was involved in that show, Fibber McGee or whomever it was. And then you get to Wolfman and Imus and Stern. And, you know, and what happened to Don Imus in the end? I got to know Imus a little bit during the Ramses. I would be on his radio show covering the Ramses for him. And we got like a shirt-tail relationship. We'd talk off air. And he got chopped. Could those guys work now? Do you think that, I mean, Stern's on the satellite. Do you think Stern could run an AM show, or do you think you could bring Don Imus back, or do you think it would be,
And Jim, I don't know what you think, but just the little that I've heard Stern lately, he's really softened up.
He actually made his triumphant return to terrestrial radio when a guy with 50 years of tenure in New York City is retiring, and he brought Howard Stern back on the radio.
Jim,
and of course, Howard had to ask some of those questions that he's so famous for. But yeah, it was pretty PG rated. But why would he want to do that? Mm-hmm. You know, just to give you a little background on the different sense of humor that Terry and I have, he came up with Radio What Happened. My suggestion for the title was going to be Dead Air, but we decided that maybe was a little bit too negative.
No. And I have that really bad sense of humor. Most stuff is funny, but no, that's okay.
No. Well, all right.
So you take the,
well, and radio people still say they have dreams about Dead Air.
Record,
you know, that's their nightmare dream. Is the record ran out,
yep.
And all you can hear is the record around the turntable.
Guys, I have that dream still. You know, it goes, and you can hear it, tickety-tick, tickety-tick, tickety-tick. And you're in the other room, or wherever you are. Our guest, this is really, it's radio. What happened? 100 Years of Changes, Terry Bettis and Jim Christopherson are with us. But you talk the golden age, but there was another. The golden age of radio, I agree, up until the advent of television, but then another golden age begins, and or maybe a silver age, and that's the disc jockey age, correct?
Oh, that's what
absolutely.
I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair analysis. You know, the 20s, 30s, and 40s, theater of the mind.
Yes,
there was no television to compete, so you didn't have that visual component. But yes, radio was revolutionized when there are a couple of people that are attributed to the creation of Top 40 radio. I think one in Iowa and then one up in Minnesota, mm-hmm. a couple of different guys, Todd Storrs and other people. But they listened to in a bar or a restaurant, and they listened to the music that was being played over and over again on the jukebox. Somebody had an epiphany, and they created a format that allowed to play Top 40 songs over and over and over again. And then with that, they just had, you know, DJs that were trying to appeal to a younger audience. And that was, I think, a silver age of radio is a great way to describe it. And that happened right on up until the 70s and 80s. And again, that's kind of where what we were born into and what I consider to be fun radio.
When we came home from school, and Dick Clark's important in this. I did an interview. He wrote a book called Rock, Roll, and Remember, and Dick Clark. And American Bandstand is significant in this culture that you're talking about. But, boy, there was, you know, the radio, we listened to the radio. We listened to the music. We listened to the jock. And it was important, yeah.
Yeah, there's push content and pull content, and radio's push. Again, there was no other way to get it unless you had this little transistor radio, which it's exactly what's happening with cell devices, mobile phone devices, and whatnot. You know, I mean, you'll sit there at the dinner table enamored with your transistor radio the way young people are with cell phones nowadays. But it was just that important to people growing up in that particular time.
And then in that time, there was, you know, there was the rise of these great men and women that you guys write about and chronicle. Wolfman Jack is a great example. Love the Wolf. I got to meet the Wolf and Bob Smith. It was talk about Wolfman Jack.
Wow. Oh, Jim, I never had the pleasure. So good for you. That would have been a great, memorable meeting, I think. Terry, you?
No, never met him, but working in Mexico at the, they call them, the furnace blasters? Or
yes.
Border blasters.
Border blasters, yeah. 250,000-watt radio stations that were not regulated by the FCC.
No. And how many of them were there? I mean, there were... The board, and there's a book about them, but there were enough of them that what the studio was in. I think Jack said that they were in Southern Cal, but the stick was in, I think, Tijuana.
And we Terry, we did have a podcast with somebody that was kind of clarifying that for us, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, because there was an FCC regulation. But they would remember, they would have the studio in El Paso.
Yeah, that
this was the Juarez station. Yeah. The studio was in El Paso. They would record it and then run the tape over across the border and air it from Juarez. But there was some FCC doctrine that was that affected that, and I can't remember exactly. We've had so many shows, I can't remember them all. But yeah, we did talk about that.
And they were 250,000 AM watts, correct?
Yeah.
And or up.
And or up, yes, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And so Wolfman could be heard in Washington State as well as he could be heard in L.A.
You know, we talked about the Golden Age and the Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Gangbusters and the Fibber McGee and Molly. But one of the things in the book we talked about was in 1938, the Orson Welles issue, with the War of the Worlds, you know, and it was funny. The program comes on and people are gathered around their radio, and the regularly scheduled program is interrupted for a news bulletin about an alien spaceship that lands. And at the end, the guy goes, you know, can you believe it? Some listeners actually thought that in the space of about 40 minutes, an alien spaceship had landed, meetings were held at the highest government offices, you know, forces were sent to defeat the alien spacecraft, and people were killed in the space of 38 minutes.
Wells is... And, you know, there was a, because I read this stuff, but after Pearl Harbor was attacked, there was a percentage of American people, when they heard it on the radio, they believed it was Wells again.
Oh, man.
For real.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that. Yeah, that they, when Pearl happened, and then they thought it was Wells again. Wells pulling off. And, you know, Wells is, he did every great thing before he was like 28 years old or something. And he did Citizen Kane. He did War of the Worlds. He had the theater in New York. And what a voice. And he actually
was 23 was when he did War of the Worlds. 23 years old.
Oh, man.
But that, you know, when you talk about Pearl Harbor, but also World War II.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that jumped radio up to an even more substantial medium, is because that's the way people got
yes.
the quickest updates on the war.
Yes.
Was by listening to the radio, by mm-hmm. listening to those transistor radios.
One of my idols is Ed Murrow, and Murrow in the Blitz with people listening to Murrow talk, you know, this. And he paused, is London, and you could hear the bombs. Boy, it's not going to get any better than that. And they were who they were.
You know, I'm going to take your suggestion. I wish I'd have heard it before we put the book out. But Silver Age of Radio mm-hmm. is yeah. great. That's a great analogy for the DJ era, the personality era of radio. And that's, to me, even up through Johnny Fever and, you know, that type person.
Oh.
I still remember, in fact, the lady that called in on your show earlier mm. and talked about the wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
I remember DJs at WFAA in Dallas, Ken Summers, doing that.
Mm-hmm.
He would do an actual strip version of the David Rose, the stripper.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have people call in, and he would play David Rose the stripper, and people would, this is kind of weird, but they would, on the phone, be at home, and they would be stripping.
Well, oh, yeah.
You got to be talented to pull that off.
I think that time, and I got to tag into the end of it, working with a guy named Bob Lee, a country morning show, but we did a two-man show, and we got enormous numbers, and it was just my introduction to this is how good it can be, and then later things happen, you know how bad it could be. But let me ask this question and then take a break. For the people on this side of the microphone, what is it that, you know, we've lived it, we're watching it, and some of it now when I listen to a lot of talk radio, the idea that, well, you used to work for Donald Trump, so now you deserve a radio show, or you used to do this, so, and the guys, and you guys are what I call radio guys, and there's a couple of them in this building, and that may be about it, but tell me what you think a radio guy is. Can we do that when we come back?
Sure.
Because, all right, everyone hang on, please. The book really is a good read. It's radio, and then what happened? 100 Years of Changes. Terry Bettis and Jim Christopherson are our guests. It is time for spring break. Arvada Army Navy Surplus. I love the place. Serving and helping customers in Old Town Arvada since 1984. They have a great spring break deals going on right now. Men's swimsuits, Hawaiian shirts for $14.99. A genuine canvas travel kit bag for $8.99. Mention this ad, get 20% off selected sunglasses, 15% off of water bottles. They also have a great discount on Ocean Beach travel belts. The socks I got on right now, darn tough socks. Stephen and the staff really are highly knowledgeable, and they will assist you in finding all the gear you need for your next spring break adventures. The store has so many cool things to check out. You'll love the place. You walk in, you stay. Arvada Army Navy Surplus, historical military gear they have on display. Stop by and see them. Old Town Arvada. Check them out, arvadasurplus.com. But it's just a wonderful, wonderful place. See them, Old Town Arvada, or check them out, arvadasurplus.com, arvadasurplus.com. One of my all-time favorite songs, Good Pick Lou. We are the Sultans. Sultans play Creole. Morning, everybody. It's a Saturday, 67, the high 48 tomorrow, and the weather changes. And Monday, 37 degrees. It's a Saturday morning, 710 KNUS. Just great guest. Ski season is still going, and the snow keeps packing up. They're going to get snow this week, and it's time to you to visit Larson Ski and Sport. All your great gear for the season, and get ready to be out there and have fun. As we mentioned, a lot of people wait for spring skiing. It's a lot warmer, brighter, lighter. Take it from me, if you need any ski or snowboard gear, for 20 years I've represented Larson Ski and Sport. They're easy to find. You're westbound on I-70, get off on the Kipling exit, come down the ramp, stay left, go underneath I-70, come out the other side, going south, look to the west, look to your right. You see the Crab Shack? Next to that, great big wooden box building. That's it. 7 days a week, Larson Ski and Sport. Convenient. Stop on your way up the hill or on your way home. The big wooden building south of I-70 on Kipling. Whatever you need, snowboards, cross country, skis, fats, side cuts, rockers. If you're a renter, do demos. Try the demo skis. Snowboarders the same way. They'll find a way. I mean, new boots, gloves, helmets, goggles, whatever it takes. 7 days a week, these are our friends. Larson Ski and Sport. Larson Ski and Sport, south of I-70 on Kipling. 303-423-0654. 303-423-0654. Or LarsonSport.com. The book is, well, and I'm going to give it actually to Lou when the show's over. Radio, What Happened? 100 Years of Changes. Terry Bettis and Jim Christopherson are our guests. There are people that I call radio guys, and they did traffic reports, and they read the news, and they jocked, and they did all these different things. I don't know. There's a question in there somewhere. Terry, you want a shot at it first?
No, I tell you what, can I? And yes, I'd love to have a shot at that. Sure. But may I just make a comment on on an observation? It's your show, so you tell me to be quiet. Okay, all right. This is Jim. Peter, I find that we're really enjoying this. I think you've got a very interesting and inquisitive mind. And people that listen to your program may not understand the term imaging, but imaging is the sound effects and the little promotional thing that radio stations do. Again, to create TOMA, top of mind awareness, so people will associate with that on an emotional and personal level. Your stuff is great. I don't know if you're doing that or if you've got a staff that prepares it for you, but I found it interesting that you use sound clips from two professional wrestlers.
Yes.
in your open. You think that's hitting your target demo?
I worked as the ring guy, and
really?
Yeah, I worked with the legendary Vern Gagne.
Oh, yeah.
And the old AWA. And the local promoter here was the late Gene Reed. And when I was a kid, I was a mark. You know, I was a fan. And I've always loved professional wrestling. And so I got a gig doing radio, and I called the local promoters. I said, can I get a wrestler on, or wrestlers on, which I would have been a. And he went to Vern, who owned the company, and Vern came in and did the radio show, and I marked out for Vern, and he gave it the green light, and I started getting wrestlers to come in and do the show. Bobby Heenan, I always credit Bobby Heenan in teaching me how to do talk radio, but.
Really?
Oh, they were great. And then one time they said, would you like to do the ring? And I said, I'd love to do the ring. By this time, I'd made some friends. And then they said, would you like to do some traveling? And so that voice is Ric Flair. That's Ric Flair's voice.
And it's also Bret Hart, too. Isn't it
Bret
Hart?
Yeah, it's Bret Hart, too. The best there is, the best there was. And,
funny.
And I got to know Flair a little bit. And Flair's who he is. I mean...
Yeah.
I'm not caught up to modern day pro wrestling, but boy, that era, I got to travel with the guys and get to know a lot of guys, and you know, I always marked out. You know, I never went the other way on anybody.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you're a remarkable guy, kind of a Renaissance man, and I'm sure your listeners appreciate the insights that you bring to them each week. Well, anyhow, going back to your question, do you mind restating that?
There are people that I have learned to call a radio guy. I mean, there are careers. You two guys are radio guys. And there's people that have gotten into the business, and they're not radio guys. They are, I don't know who they are. They are, when somebody hires them, oh, you used to do this, so you can do that. And it's troublesome to me, knowing the great legends that you guys have been talking about. That was their lives. That was their careers.
I think, Peter, this is Terry. I have two thoughts about that. One is a lot of radio people are extroverts with a face for radio.
Yeah.
but the other thing is, I think radio creates true radio guys. I think the business creates that, and I do think there's some that aren't real radio people, but it brings out the radio guy in you. I would still like to have a studio at my house. There's just something about being in a radio broadcast studio with turntables and tape machines and commercials and a control board. That stuff just gets in your blood if you are a radio guy. So I think the industry itself makes radio guys. I don't know if they're just originally creative. The industry was fairly easy to get into. At some level, you could find a job. It might be at a small market, but the industry basically was fairly easy to get into, as opposed to TV. I think TV was a little harder to get into, but I think the industry itself creates these radio guys. At least I'd like to think it does.
Yeah, I mean, but these are people who are recent arrivals, and I look back. You know, you do a whole segment on legendary disc jockeys. You mentioned Limbaugh briefly, but and Limbaugh changed. We all owe Limbaugh everything for what he did for this part of it, for the AM talkers. But you mentioned those guys like Imus and Stern, and I mean, and how do you describe them?
And Ron Chapman in Dallas. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but mm-hmm. he was, to me, the greatest radio announcer I have ever heard. He could use theater of the mind. He knew how to speak to the audience. He was funny, but he was also could be very serious. Ron Chapman, in my mind, was the best ever. And he lasted for decades at KVIL. In fact, he started in Dallas radio in the 60s, but went to KVIL in the 70s and was still going after 2000. So he went 30 or 40 years. And he just had an innate ability to communicate with only a microphone. It's a tremendous talent. And he got paid a lot of money to be that talent.
But, you know, the idea, and I had to explain it to some young guys, we are not narrowcasters, we're broadcasters. And our job is to bring in the largest audience that we can, and then our commercial advertisers take it from there. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. This is Jim, and that's exactly, again, it's all driven by economics.
Yeah.
If it's not going to be profitable, you're not going to be able to have 10 announcers on one radio station. But yes, but you know, one of the things that Terry put together for the end of the book is that there's still hope. I mean, you know, we're asking radio what happened, but there, hopefully somebody will come along, some young guy that comes along, and baby boomers won't be saying, oh, we tried that 20 years ago, it's not going to work. But somebody will come along and kind of reignite what's happening with radio. But even the publicly traded companies, the corporate companies, know they need the QM, which is the total audience of the week for that radio station. They need that QM audience to drive share to their website, where they sell digital marketing, and that's where they're making money now. If you look at the earnings reports from iHeart or Cumulus, or, you know, the broadcast revenue is down for the most part. It's still high, but it's down. Really, the gains they're making are with digital. And I even reference in the book that we had some contests when I was in L.A. where we would distribute music surveys. And you know, we put a little note, a little marker on them, and they could win a prize with it. If we had the digital functionality that radio stations have today, that would have helped us out a whole lot too. So, but going back even further, one step further, Peter, I don't think they hire radio guys anymore. They're looking for people that can do content.
Yeah.
So you could walk in with a Gary Owens voice, and that won't get you anything. But if you can write a story or put together some type of a post on a social media platform, you probably got a job.
Talk about ratings and how that is significant, and maybe not as significant as it once was, but, man, ratings were everything. Speak to that.
Yeah, we used to call it. Yeah, as a matter of fact, WKRP even had several episodes of The Book. That's when the Arbitron or the Nielsen or whatever they called it back then would come out. But yeah, kind of live and die by the ratings. We can see where, for instance, the station that you were talking about a minute ago, the country station, you probably had shares of about 10 or 15% of the audience, right?
We killed it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, maybe 20. You know, a good share now with adults in the age group of 25-54 might be a 7 or an 8.
Yeah.
And that's just that's a reflection of the sets in use. A rating is actually lower. It could be a 2 or a 3, and that's a reflection of all of the people that are listening in that particular universe. And those numbers are really, really, really small. So, again, radio still reaches about 85% of all the United States over the age of 6. You know, it's not fallen off the map like television has, and certainly there's no newspaper circulation anymore. Radio still has a lot of people tuning in, but it's been affected.
How much would a point in the book, and you point that out well, if you came up a point in a major market, what would that mean in terms of revenue? Just one ratings point increase.
Well, it really depends on the client. You know, they're looking at a cost per point. Sometimes, you know, it could be $100 a commercial. Sometimes it could be, in a market the size of, say, Abilene, Texas, you're lucky to get $12 a point. But it's substantial. If you're in a major market and your ratings go up one point, it could be a couple hundred thousand dollars over a year.
I've just been told there's 2 minutes left. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It's okay.
I want you guys to come back. I just love listening to you speak. It's clarity.
And we would love to have you on our podcast, Radio What Happened, sometime.
Here's what I'll do. I'll put you on hold. Speak with Lou. He'll give you a phone number, and we'll go from there. But
you bet.
Hey, you guys made the morning. Yeah.
Real quickly, the book, Radio What Happened, is available right now at Amazon.com.
Lou, they're yours. Okay, real quick, you guys, you've heard me talk about treating low testosterone and improving your sleep, your workouts, your energy levels, but sex life, low testosterone can have significant impact on your desire for intimacy. It's good news, RockyMountainMensClinic.com. Please, I got to tell you something from the bottom of my top 40 heart, it works. Schedule a consultation, Rocky Mountain Men's Clinic. Colorado licensed medical provider will review and show you the results and discuss your options. $99 includes a medical consultation, a T and a PSA test. Sign up, Rocky Mountain Men's Clinic, serving the Front Range in Colorado for nearly a decade and treated tens of thousands of men successfully. 720-440-7900, 720-440-7900, 720-440-7900, RockyMountainMensClinic.com. Tell them Peter Boyle sent you. It was a great morning. Lou did a good job. The Sandhill Cranes, I got to tell you something. that was an emotional experience to do that. And thanks to Dave and Scott Minow. And Vic, thank you for coming on the show and those last two guys as well. That is it. You take care of yourselves, and we'll do it next Saturday as well. It was an important day. Lou, we there? Oh, we are going to take a break and come back. Okay, I apologize. I was reading the clock wrong, which shows you that's what it is. So I still got the guys. All right, hang on. I apologize. I'm Peter Boyles, 710 KNUS. After all of that, I missed time. It's Saturday. 67 will be the high. It's the 23rd of March. It's 710 KNUS Denver's talk station. We asked Terry and Jim to stay. I apologize, fellas. I was so wrapped up in the conversation, and I misread the digital. One of the things I wanted to do, and I had made a marker for that to do it, was to talk about different shifts. So well, the all-night guy, my favorite gig in all of radio has to be the all-night guy. Take a second. Who always ends up the all-night guy?
I started as the all-night guy, and it's midnight to six. It is a change of life because you sleep differently. I would go home at 8 o'clock in the morning and sleep till 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
I could not get enough sleep no matter what. But I did that for several months, and like I say, it changes your world. But you talk to people on the phone that are very interesting.
Oh,
you know, because they're insomniacs or
yes,
or whatever, and they're up late at night. So it's a very interesting shift. Jim, mm-hmm. Did you ever do all night? You probably did.
You know, I've been blessed. I started out as a 9 to noon disc jockey. So and then when I became a program director, I would do mornings. Mostly, I love that 9 to noon. I could get a lot of stuff done doing that. So, no, I never had those late night or all night shifts.
Greatest shift is 9 to noon. That's the you don't have to get up, drive in traffic. But the all night guy, and I've known some legendary all night guys, they said management doesn't listen.
Real quick, when I was doing transmitter watch at KDNT in Denton, I would go in at midnight and sit on the board for 2 hours. And the GM said, do not ever, ever, ever open the microphone. Do not ever open the microphone. Well, a month goes by, and it's 1:45, and I think, surely,
they're not listening.
He's not going to listen. So I open the mic and do a quick weather forecast. And before I was finished, the red light on the phone starts blinking. And it's the owner from Fort Worth saying, I told you don't ever talk on the microphone.
Good grief.
Now we're down to 30 seconds. Fellas, I mistimed the ending. You made the morning. It was really enjoyable. And I know we'll get together. We'll talk again. But thank you for making it work and for indeed telling the truth. Radio.
Outstanding job.
Yeah.
Outstanding job. Thanks.
Thanks, fellas. Be safe. Terry, Jim, thank you, guys. All right. That will do it. Now, rounding third and headed to home. We'll be back here next Saturday morning at 9 a.m. where we'll do it again. 710 KNUS Denver's talk station. So, Lou, you call him when you want to get us out of here. He's on the other line talking to folks off air. The book was entitled, or is entitled, Radio, and then it's What Happened, 100 Years of Changes. And we're getting a lot of people calling about it. The guy's last name is spelled Bettis. The other guy is Christopherson. That'll do it. Take care, everybody.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.